Hey there, MuggleCast listeners! I am back to inform you of some excellent news. GoDaddy.com is having better deals than ever. For only $3.59 a month for 12 months, you can get GoDaddy.com's Economy Package. And with 250 gigs of bandwidth, 5 gigs of storage, and up to 500 email accounts, you can get your own website up and running with success. And as usual, enter code MUGGLE, that's M-U-G-G-L-E, when you check out. Save an additional 10% on any order. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
This week's podcast is also brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/mugglecast today for details.
Because it's looking more and more like the final film will be split in two, this is MuggleCast episode 132 for February 17th, 2008.
Alright, well, this week, I have good news and I have bad news. The bad news is, I am too awesome for this show. The good news is, Matt and Mike are here.
That's right.
I don't really get that.
What? What do you mean?
What you just said.
What?
Why is the bad news that you're too awesome for the show? Are you leaving?
What?
Are you really?
You become too awesome that you're leaving the show, and that's the bad news?
Well, I considered it last week. My letter was actually a big lie, as everyone found out. But I was actually considering leaving the show because I really am too awesome for this show. But speaking of this week's show, we have a lot to discuss this week. Some interesting new developments in the news, and of course, chapter by chapter. And we're going to introduce two new segments that this week that are spin-offs of segments we've been doing for a while, but it's time to put a new twist on them. A new fun twist. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
And I'm Matthew Britton.
Micah Tannenbaum's in the MuggleCast News Center with the past week's top Harry Potter news stories. Hey, Micah.
All right, thanks, Andrew. The 50th annual Grammy Awards were held last Sunday night, where it was announced that Jim Dale, the narrator of the U.S. Potter audiobooks, received a Grammy for his reading of Deathly Hallows. Jim also won back in 2000 for Goblet of Fire. The Daily Telegraph has a new article focusing on the continuing rumors of the final Potter film being split into two parts. When these rumors started 1 month ago, all we heard from Warner Brothers was a big, no decision has been made. Now we hear from the film's producers. From David Barron, he says, "We are still discussing it. The announcement will be made hopefully in the not-too-distant future with regards to the way Seven shapes up. The only negative of splitting the book into two films," says Barron, "is that people could possibly perceive it as being one last chance at cashing in. But the real positive, if we were to do that, would be that we wouldn't have quite the battle we always have of how do you compress all that book into just over 2 hours of screen time." From David Heyman, a couple of people have expressed interest, he says. "People have gotten a few calls and a few emails, but it's still a year away. We won't start filming until next February, so it hasn't really gone bananas yet. We've got thoughts, and I'm sure something will be announced in the not-too-distant future." And you may remember last week we reported Steven Spielberg is one of the candidates being considered for Deathly Hallows. However, at the BAFTA Awards, Digital Spy reported Dan Radcliffe told the press these rumors are not true at all. He said, "I have no idea how that rumor started or where it came from. It's not true. How's that for a definitive answer? It's absolute rubbish that Spielberg is directing the final film.
It's not true. There's absolutely no foundation in that at all. Currently, there isn't any word on other directors being considered, but we expect an announcement in the coming months. In a new interview with MTV, Clemence Posey revealed that her character has been cut from Half-Blood Prince. She also told MTV that she hasn't read the final three books. Author J.K. Rowling was presented by the Literary and Historical Society of UCD in Dublin with the James Joyce Award this week. Over 600 fans turned out to see the author read from Deathly Hallows and answer 10 questions. Finally, in a new interview, Jason Isaacs, the actor who portrays Lucius Malfoy, discussed his absence in Half-Blood Prince. At the recent BAFTAs, he told Rotten Tomatoes that it was a source of great embitterment in the Isaacs household, but he's an Azkaban, so what can you do? However, he has high hopes for the last installment. That's all the news for this February 17th, 2008 edition of MuggleCast. Back to the show.
All right, thank you, Micah Tan, the MuggleCast anchor newsman.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of news this week. I mean, a lot.
There is. My roller coaster theory, man, I'm telling you. It's 1 week you got nothing, and then the next week it's woo!
I mean, some weeks it's so bad you have to throw the news to yourself and then thank yourself after it's over with.
I think that's because nobody wants to intro you. It's actually kind of weird because, not to change the subject at all, but Matt's actually at my house this week and he's recording in my basement, and I can hear a slight echo every time he talks because, like, everything in the basement can be heard throughout the entire house.
Is that true?
So it's like, yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. Yeah, I can hear that. My parents are probably like, what the? Anyway, let's get to the news. Michael, what do you think the biggest news story was this week?
The biggest news story? I would say, personally, the one that hurt the most is there's no Clemence Posey in Half-Blood Prince.
Now, why did that hurt?
Well, you know,
does that have to do with the popular phrase sex sells?
Maybe. Perhaps. But
she's French.
She is. And but we'll get to that. I think I thought the biggest news was David Heyman's comments. Or was it a mixture of him and what was the guy's name? I apologize, I'm blanking.
David Barron.
Yeah. Talking about Deathly Hallows. And finally, we get to hear a little bit about if this movie is going to be split or not.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because there are a couple of questions that this article itself raises. But this is really exciting to hear from the producers themselves, because just a few weeks ago, we got, you know, an official word from Warner Brothers via some website. It was, you know, no decision has been made yet. But now here's David Barron and David Heyman, the producers, the people who have a very large influence in this decision, speaking out about this. What gets me about David Barron's quote, what gets me about David Barron, what he said, I quote from news.com.au, "The only negative of splitting the book into two films, says Barron, is that people could possibly perceive it as being one last chance at cashing in. But the real positive, if we were to do that, would be that we wouldn't have quite the battle we always have of, quote, how do you compress all that book into just over 2 hours of screen time?"
Yes.
Was he listening to our show a couple weeks ago? It sounds like he might have been.
He has to. I mean, where else can they get that stuff from?
Yeah.
I don't know. We come up with innovative and thought-provoking discussion here. But their only problem with this is that people think is that they don't want people to think they're just cashing in. Because obviously, you know, that is a real concern. A lot of skeptics may see it as that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's just I think this is a very, 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 very good sign of what's to come from just David Barron.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and he's speaking like a true fan. You know, they realize the concern is the beauty of it would be that they would not have to cut the book
down. Well, the fact that he's already defensive about why if they choose to put it in two halves just makes it even more certain. You know?
Yeah.
He says, "Well, I mean, that wouldn't be the case. So guys, don't be too upset if we do it in two parts, because we just might."
Right.
Yeah, and I think it gives it a whole lot of traction now, meaning that this is a real discussion that they've been having internally. It's not just some rumor that's been thrown out there, if these guys are taking the time to actually address it, and the words that they used make it seem like they've been having a lot of talks about this.
Right.
But the one thing that isn't addressed as far as splitting it into two is, could they actually do it in the way we talked about a couple weeks ago, where they put in an intermission or something along those lines, as opposed to with what David Barron said, talking about cashing in. That gives me the impression that if they did split it, it would be two completely separate films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, I agree with you, Mike, completely. That's definitely what the impression is.
Yeah.
And I've also gotten the impression that they actually want to split it. Because if you're going to invest the time in making this film longer by possibly, you're possibly doubling the length, that's going to double the production cost. So you will have to make more money off of this. I mean, you know, it's not necessarily cashing in, but you need to still balance your profit versus your expenses.
Well, they already know they're going to get a big profit because it's going to be the final film of the series. So
yeah,
they're going to go all out for this one. I think it's just great that the fact that they're even just talking about, even if they're not going to split it into two movies, that they're even just considering talking and debating about whether it's cut into two parts just shows how dedicated they are to making the final film the best.
Well, here's my big question that I mentioned earlier. My question is, when did David Barron and David Heyman say this exactly? Was this 2 months ago? Was this a month ago? Was this last week? Because the impression betting man Andrew has received is that if he were a betting man, he would think that a decision has already been made. So I don't know if these quotes are very recent. I'm thinking these could be a little bit older, because David Heyman says a couple people have expressed interest. People have gotten a few calls and a few emails, but it's still a year away.
And if I was a betting man, I would bet on whatever you bet on, because whenever you're a betting man...
Well, that's just if I was a betting man.
Well, I would say probably at least this month they made those comments, because when he says it's still a year away, then his next quote starts off about them not starting filming until February.
It had to have been recently.
But on the other hand, the script does not get written in February. It gets written,
that's true,
you know.
No, that's
but
much true.
But it's so, but also the writer's strike may have delayed it.
Although, wasn't it supposed to end? We're recording Tuesday. Wasn't it supposed to end Monday?
I think it's over,
but,
isn't it? Am I wrong?
I don't know.
They were about to reach
something.
I saw a
website about you had to vote or something like that yesterday,
yeah.
Or which was Monday.
Well, you know, we'll see what comes out of this, but I think these are very reassuring signs. This is a very interesting article, probably one of the more interesting articles we've had to report in a few months, because this is coming straight from the producers. Of course, when myself and a few other fan sites were on the set, we also asked them about the movie split, but we can't talk about it. So it's like, you know, they didn't, I will say they didn't confirm anything officially, but we, you know, this definitely seems like it's going to happen if I were a betting man. I guess we'll move on to other news and we'll continue to follow that. I'm sure once the news breaks officially, we'll... Oh, the other thing that got me about that article was that they both said in the exact same words, an announcement would be made to quote both Heyman and Barron in the not too distant future. They both said the exact words, not too distant future. So it seems like they already do have a decision made, and they're all throwing around in their emails and phone calls and IMs and text messages and Facebook wall posts that it is in the not too distant future.
And they're probably told that's exactly what you should say when asked about it.
Maybe. But not too distant future means soon.
Yeah, that's why it's called not too distant future.
Right, but Heyman's sort of contradicting himself, because he's like, only a few emails have been thrown around, and you know, it's a huge decision. But an announcement in the not too distant.
Well, that quote should also confirm that they've made the statement pretty recently. Otherwise, the not too distant future would be now.
Well, that's true too. But the question is, Micah, what is the future?
The future is now.
Oh man. I think of the year 2000 from Conan when you just said that.
In the year 2000.
I've actually been there when they've done that. I forget who I saw do it. I think it was David Duchovny.
Awesome. But speaking anyway. Of David Duchovny, Jim Dale picked up a Grammy Award for his reading of Deathly Hallows, which was fantastic.
That's awesome.
He won back for Goblet of Fire, and he won again for Deathly Hallows.
How is that connected to David Duchovny?
They both have the letter D in their name.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice one.
What do you guys think? Impressed?
Well, I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a good voice. He does the voice. Doesn't he do the voice for the theatrical trailers for the Harry Potter movies, too?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes. Isn't there one guy who does the voice for every single movie trailer in the world?
Oh, no. Dude, I'm a film major, so I know these things.
It was a time of dance. No, Jim Dale doesn't do the trailer voices.
Oh, I thought he did. Okay.
The guy who does the trailer voices was on some of those commercials. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
The TV spots for the films?
No. That guy who does the movie voices or the trailer voices.
From that commercial, the Geico commercial?
The Geico, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah, no, that's the most popular guy. I forgot his name too. But no, there's a group of people. Not one person can do all the trailers for the title. That's insane. The guy would never get any sleep.
Yeah. So congrats to Jim Dale. That's a fantastic award, and should encourage more people to buy the audiobooks because they are a great read.
We'd like to remind everyone again that today's podcast is also brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 35,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere, just like MuggleCast. If you're into Harry Potter as much as we recommend checking out Twilight, a book we've discussed on MuggleCast a few times. You've heard from our listeners about it, now you can give it a try free on Audible. Just visit audiblepodcast.com/MuggleCast today to get your free audiobook. Once again, it's www.audiblepodcast.com/MuggleCast for your free audiobook.
Let's see, other news here. Just one more little tidbit. I know there was a lot of discussion last week about Spielberg directing Deathly Hallows because of that quote from Richard Griffiths, but turns out Dan Radcliffe told thespy.co.uk that it's absolute rubbish, folks.
Rubbish. So, he used British slang for it. It's got to be true.
Yeah, that's absolute rubbish.
Well, it is rubbish. I can't believe people actually thought Steven Spielberg would actually direct them.
Well, it does seem a tad unreal. I don't know. It certainly wouldn't surprise me if he was definitely under consideration.
I would be happy though if they got John Williams back. That would be a plus if Steven Spielberg directed it.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know. This was kind of the question I had going back to last week, but why would you necessarily need Steven Spielberg for John Williams to make a return? You wouldn't, do you?
No, because Alfonso Cuarón did it too. But
so he only worked with certain directors.
It seems like that, though. It kind of does. He seems to like connect with people he's either worked before or people who are good friends with people he's worked before.
Oh, okay. I just didn't know.
I don't think he's done films for movies that he doesn't really know the director well. I mean, it's kind of. It does make sense because you really need to collaborate with the director and everything. You need a kind of a relationship somewhat.
Yeah.
And the guy's 80.
Not sure that... My thoughts last week also were that I wasn't quite sure that Deathly Hallows needs Steven Spielberg. Not to sound arrogant in a way, but all these other directors have kind of found their own way with the Harry Potter movies and made them their own. And I think that... You know, even bringing back other directors that have worked on the other films, or perhaps some sort of collaborative effort between a bunch of them, might not be so bad.
I don't think so. A big budget director for Deathly Hallows that hasn't already directed the previous films, I think would be a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Like someone like Steven Spielberg, he's already an established director, and he would definitely. I honestly think Steven Spielberg would make Deathly Hallows more. Of his movie rather than a Harry Potter film.
Right. That's a good point.
Let's make a checklist. What do you need in a director to direct the final film? I think you need someone who has read the books, really enjoys the books, and can connect to the fans. So that's one thing. You need someone, I agree with Matt, who's directed the films before, because you have to know this cast and crew for this final movie, because this is very important.
Well, not just even direct a film before, but directed a film that's pretty relevant to the film that you're going to direct.
Yeah, but it would also, I mean, you already have a selection of, what, 4 directors to choose from to direct, so...
Definitely a director who's very familiar with Harry Potter, because this book is a collaboration of all the previous 6 novels. So, I think it's kind of overwhelming for a person just brought into the whole world. Combining 7 novels together, you have to know all the knowledge for each one of those to actually get the 7th book to really stand out and make sense.
You got to have a director that's going to bring back Clemence Posey. I don't know what David Yates was thinking. David, we have to
maybe
talk.
It wasn't David.
Offset.
Jeez.
It could be Heyman.
Well,
maybe.
I really hope they at least
What about David Heyman? I mean, would he ever consider directing? He's been there though.
Has he ever directed?
No, I mean...
Now that would be amazing. I would love if he were to direct, but I feel like he's probably got enough on his plate being the producer.
He's definitely, yeah. I mean, he has enough say in the films. He practically directs it himself too.
Yeah. He is the producer for a lot of films. The Giants of Groil coming out in 2008, The Occupants coming out in 2008, The History of Love coming out in 2009, of course, Harry Potter in 2010, We're the Millers in 2009. So, yeah, he's got a lot on his plate right now. I don't see anything where he was a director, though.
He's probably not a director.
He's just not, yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah. You know, now that they're extending the film, if you're going to extend the film and turn it into 2, put more extra care about it into it. I mean, this is really, really good news seeing that they're going to split it into 2 parts because they want to put extra time into it, which is fantastic, which shows that they care about the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't care. They're not just doing it to cash in. Mm-hmm. David.
Oh,
Barron's
there's another checklist for you. Having the time to do 2 films.
Oh, yeah.
But it'll because... be filmed at once, no?
Yeah,
right, but it's still going to take longer.
Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of directors that are experienced tend to take on more than 1 project at once.
All right, well, I guess that's enough of that. Speaking of taking on 2 projects at once, we have a few announcements this week. We want to remind everyone we're going to be at Portis 2008. That's hp2008.org. It's a Harry Potter symposium at their Potter Podcast Palooza full of pickles. We're going to be there with a few other podcasts, and it's going to be a night of podcasting, and it's going to be a whole lot of fun. So it's going to be in Dallas, and it's going to be in July, and it's going to be awesome. So visit hp2008.org for more details, and you can also sign up and register for the conference, and we hope to see you there.
Mm-hmm.
I have something else to announce. My lifelong dream finally came true Friday nights at Penn State in State College, Pennsylvania, where I attended MuggleCast listener Vivian's 15th birthday party, and she had the Remus Lupins there, mainly Alex Carpenter and Toby Carlin. And while they were rehearsing before the show, they were like, they were looking for another song to add into their set list. And Alex was like, hey, Sims, you want to do your Wizard Rock song? And I was like, do I? So we rehearsed a couple times and I performed it. And it's now on YouTube. It's got my awesome lyrics. I got Samantha Friedman, former MuggleCast transcriber, on backup lyrics, and then we got Alex on guitar and Toby on drums. It's fantastic. If you like my Wizard Rock single, go to MuggleCast.com, and there's a link to the YouTube video. Matt, what did you think of it? You were there live.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, my God. It was like... it was okay.
Okay. That's kind of mean, but
all
okay.
Right. It was great.
All right. I'm getting a lot of good feedback on YouTube, on the YouTubes. Thanks to Jennifer Levine for filming that for me, too. That was good. So, yeah, check that out. Link can be found at MuggleCast.com. Gosh, I'll tell you what. It was so exciting. I loved it. And one other thing. While I was with Alex this weekend, we don't have anything really set yet. But, you know, we've been talking about the spring tour that we're still trying to work out, but Alex Carpenter also brought up the idea of doing another summer tour like we did this past summer, probably covering the West.
Yeah,
West Coast. So I don't know if we're going to do it yet, but I'm...
Stop complaining with the emails.
Yeah.
Hey.
Which I don't get because you guys were out there last year.
Right, but we didn't go too north. We didn't go very north.
Seattle,
yeah. Right, yeah.
Go to, like, to
we're actually
SoCal
Alex
to
was talking
SoCal up to Oregon, Washington, and
in Canada. He wants to go up to Canada too, so
just a little bit, yeah.
We'll see, you know, who we can get together to do this. It'd be a lot of fun. We had an absolute blast on the last summer road tour. It was seriously greatest time of my life. Like, it was just so much fun meeting all these people and traveling the whole way. But yeah, so that's still very early on in planning stages. Again, don't get too excited yet. I'm just letting everyone know, because all these people who are going around being like, oh, MuggleCast is dead. Well, no, we're still planning lots of live shows for you guys. So
yeah,
we'll update you in the coming months.
And just on the spring break tour, we're still waiting to hear. That's about the best update I have.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But I think, as we mentioned before, we went one way and that didn't really work out. So we're trying some other things and we're going to have to put this together pretty quickly, but hopefully we can.
Yeah, very quickly.
So,
not really. It will have to be quick because it'll be less than a month. But if you are, well, let's say this. If you are planning on coming to this East Coast tour, if we do it, hopefully, we're hoping, it'll be like just a little over a month from now. Block those dates out, 15th to the 20th. Write MuggleCast in your calendar. And
yeah,
with a question mark.
Yeah.
We do know one thing. It will be free. And we do know another thing. It will be fun. Let's move on to Muggle Mail now. We got quite a few emails this week we wanted to talk about.
All right. The first mail comes from Melanie from Australia. She says, oh, we need Andy to do this, man. G'day.
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 I was listening to episode 131, where you discussed the Dursley scene being taken out of the Half-Blood Prince movie. You all said that the most important things about that scene was Dumbledore's hand and his interaction and the humor of it with the Dursleys. I would have thought that the most important part of that scene would have been Creature. They seem to be cutting him out entirely, which would make his placement in Order of the Phoenix pointless, which was pointless to begin with, and his storyline in Deathly Hallows obsolete. J.K. Rowling recommended that he be put in Order of the Phoenix, as he would play an important part later, but I get the feeling that they are not going to use it in any way for the Deathly Hallows movie. What do you think? Keep up the good work, Melanie.
I think they can actually put it in Deathly Hallows if they make it into two films, in fact.
Yeah, this all goes back to last episode and us talking about where the movie's going to begin and also how important we thought that this scene was going to be. And I think it really goes to the overall picture of a lot of stuff being left out of Half-Blood Prince. I know we mentioned before Flora being left out, and what makes me wonder, you know, you see all these characters not being brought back for the sixth film, but that worries me in the sense of how they're going to do Dumbledore's funeral, if they're going to do it at all, because there are a lot of people there that we haven't seen yet been named for this film.
Yeah, we haven't even seen Scrimgeour been casted yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, I think they will cut probably Creature from the sixth film, because basically if you have Creature in the sixth film, you have to bring back Dobby as well, don't you? Because aren't they in the same scenes together?
Yeah.
Doesn't Dobby bring back Creature when when Harry has to tell him something? Or
I
ask
think
a
so.
Favor or something?
Yeah.
It's kind of, well, but I don't know. It's...
Well, I think his role is bigger in Deathly Hallows.
Oh, it's definitely better.
To leave him out of that, I mean, that's why J.K. Rowling said he at least needed to make an appearance in Order of the Phoenix, I think Dobby, you can kind of dance around him a little bit because he's not as integral to the story until, of course, Deathly Hallows again. I mean, it's great that he's there and he makes his appearances, but I can see how they could leave him out.
I can see them actually leaving out Creature and Dobby out of the sixth film also. I wish they didn't, but I don't know. What do you think, Andrew?
I don't know. I'm very skeptical of all this because they have about 4 months left of filming, and you know they've done 6 months.
How can they cut Scrimgeour out of this movie?
I don't know. I don't know. It's somewhat worrying. But
yes,
it would be a great opening scene. I mean, we talked about this also last week and how the movie would open. And I can't remember, Andrew, if you cut this out of the show when Eric had the realization that the movie would open with Spinner's End as opposed to this scene, which we thought would end up being Harry and Dumbledore walking up the path to Slughorn's house. But then Eric realized that Spinner's End comes before that. I think it would be a great opening to have that discussion between Scrimgeour and the Muggle Prime Minister, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important. I think it's a very ominous way to start. Although it seems like...
I agree.
And it's also one of the last times you see Fudge.
Yeah.
On her email here, though, I mean, I know Creature is in this chapter that we were talking about, but, I mean... It can really just be overlooked by a conversation between Dumbledore and Harry where Dumbledore says, you know, Sirius left you Grimmauld Place, Creature, and Buckbeak, and that's it. You know, I don't really know that he needs to make an appearance.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they'll bring back Buckbeak and Half-Blood Prince? Because it was a big project in Prisoner of Azkaban, and it seems like all the big project, especially the characters that they... CGI never returns unless it's the biggest. It has a huge part.
They do keep them though.
They do. Well, I mean, I'm saying like with Dobby, and
yeah,
which is disappointing to the sort of crazed fan, I guess if you call him that, or the you know kind of like what you were just saying. I mean, we don't want all these things to be left out because you know we like to just have that. Being in there, even if it's only there for, you know, 10 or 15 seconds, because it shows that they pay attention to the books.
Yeah.
And they're not going to neglect the fans. And, like, you know, David Barron's quote, they cash in. So, who cares? I don't really think that the cost should be an issue about them including a Buckbeak or a Dobby or a Creature. They make it seem like it, but yet these movies rake in so much money, it's a wonder... why they use that as the excuse for not including them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, each film does get more expensive than the previous one does, too. We're probably not really considering something that kind of makes a big deal.
Yeah. It's hard to say. Like, I don't even, like... Okay, I'm not one to, like, brag that I went to the set, but I went to the set, and I don't even know these answers. So, I think we just have to wait and see what they're going to do. Back to my original point, though, it is worrying that there's 6 months in the filming, and we still don't have a full list of casting announcements.
Yeah, and but we haven't heard many casting either. We haven't heard any major casting since when? Since what? Would you count even?
I think the last casting we heard about was like young Tom Riddle.
No, I think it was Pansy Parkinson.
Oh, it was. Yeah, that was really recently, actually. Yeah.
Well, we're talking about big casting.
Yes.
I mean, not since Jim Broadbent, I think.
Well,
to be honest, I mean, you're talking about major characters, not to belittle young Tom Riddle or Pansy Parkinson, but I mean,
Lavender Brown, even.
No, she was cast.
I know, that's what I'm saying. She's not really that big of a character.
Yeah. You know, I'm not trying to diminish their roles, but you know, I'm thinking more along the lines of for Half-Blood Prince, Slughorn, Scrimgeour, the Gaunts, which are another group of people who haven't been cast and seemingly getting closer and closer to what looks like being cut from the film.
It does. It does really kind of look like they're basically centering a lot around the students around Hogwarts this time. Like they said, it's starting to be like a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
And I just hope they're not delving too much into that genre and kind of go away from what actually the book is about.
Yeah, and what about which centaur is it that teaches divination in this book?
Friends.
Yeah. I mean, are they bringing him back?
They didn't even bring him in the fifth film.
Let's move on to the next email now, though, because, you know, we actually did get a lot of feedback about, you know, that discussion about how the Happily Prince should open up. So we'll talk about it more next week. You know, maybe we'll just talk about little by little as the movie gets closer.
Our next email comes from Smee from 19 from Flooded Australia. Is that really a name?
No, I think she's saying that it Australia's flooded right now.
Oh. Hey, guys and girl. Just wanted to correct you in on your discussion of Grindelwald acquiring the Elder Wand from Gregorovitch. You guys mentioned that the power of the wand mustn't have transferred to Grindelwald because he didn't duel Gregorovitch. But that isn't true. Right before he jumped out the window, Grindelwald shot a stunning spell at Gregorovitch, effectively winning the wand from him because he had outsmarted Gregorovitch, winning him the Elder Wand's allegiance. I had thought that you didn't need to fight the person in order to get the wand from them. You just had to outsmart them in some way. Though, as Joe writes in later chapters, the Elder Wand has a bloody history because everyone believes you must kill the previous owner in order to win the wand's power. Also, just a note to say that Joe described Grindelwald as having delight in his handsome face. And when he shot the stunning spell, he was described as handsome, not beautiful. So, there. By the way, whatever happened to the outcome of Andrew's fastest show close? I was looking forward to finding out, but we never did hear anything on the next episode. Anyway, look forward to next week's episode. Love, Smee. Smee.
About the fastest show close, I don't know. We never got an email comparing the time, so I don't know.
So what do you guys think?
I don't know. Mikey, you want to field this one? Because I wasn't
Because
really...
I was on last week's show.
Yeah.
This all goes back to we were having a debate, or I guess Mikey and Eric were talking about
Mikey and Eric were talking?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, that's bad. Yeah. That's bad. You take that out, please.
No, that was funny.
That was funny. I think the point that she's trying to make is that last week we had mentioned that Grindelwald didn't actually acquire the wand in a dueling fashion. He just took it, and so he was never the true owner of it, if that makes sense. And I think what Smee is arguing is that, well, he shot a stunning spell, so that is how he was able to take the wand. But I mean, I guess it goes back to if you know really how the ownership side of it works. Because if you look at what Draco did, I mean, he only disarmed Dumbledore. That's how he became the new owner of the Elder Wand. And I guess that goes to her point about Joe saying that it had such a bloody history because the people thought that you needed to kill your opponent in order to acquire the Elder Wand. But in reality, if you look at it, I mean, with the Draco situation, he didn't kill Dumbledore. He just disarmed him, and then the power was transferred. So I guess something as simple as a stunning spell can transfer the power as well. I mean...
Well, that also goes back to the first book, too, when everyone had the assumption that since Dumbledore defeated Grindelwald, that he killed him. But defeat doesn't technically mean you kill. It just means you overcome them in a battle or something.
Yeah, and it's also why Joe was so quiet on the issue for so long, never really defining what she meant by the word defeated. And I guess now we all know why in this book.
Now, Vanquish, that's kill.
Well, let's move on to the next email. It comes from Jordan16 of Roanoke, Virginia. He writes, "Hey, MuggleCasters, while listening to episodes 130 and 131, I heard a lot of debate about Ron's magical ability. One incident in the books has made me sure of Ron's magical power throughout the series. In Chapter 7 of Chamber of Secrets, when Ron is puking up slugs after his wand backfires, Hermione says that the curse he used was difficult to work at the best of times. Ron cast the curse with a broken wand, and aside from it coming out the wrong end of the wand, it had this exact effect it was meant for. And he was only 12 at the time. Think of how much better his spell work must have become over the years. I honestly think that Ron is the most powerful and useful to everyone, including himself, when he doesn't think about what he's doing. If he thinks, he second-guesses himself, which is the worst thing to do while under pressure. That's just my 2 cents worth. Love the show, and keep up the great work." I agree with that point. I think that's a very good point.
I think that he's the most powerful of himself. Let's not go overboard here. I don't think he's the most powerful of all of them.
But I do agree about, and I think maybe this is what Joe's getting at, when you overthink something, you can second guess yourself. And let me give you a real world example, and some people are going to relate, and some people are going to think it's really stupid. When you play Dance Dance Revolution or Guitar Hero, you can't think about what you're doing. You just have to stare at it and just not concentrate. If you just let it, if you just don't focus intently, you will play or dance much better than you would if you focus on it. And trust me on that, because that happens to me all the time. And when I'm showing people how to play it, you know, that's what I tell them to do, and it makes a difference. You just can't focus on something, or like Jordan says, you'll overguess yourself. Second guess yourself.
Third guess yourself.
Good point. Yeah, no?
Yeah, sure. It's not that stupid.
Okay. Well, good.
Glad we agree.
Next email I have to take from Christian Wagoner, 17 of Tennessee. I'm just kidding. You guys don't want to talk like that. He or she writes, "Hey, how do you get such a clean sound from the conference call that you use to record your podcasts?" And my answer to that is that we're actually awesome. Who wants to read the next email?
The last email comes from Jean Gray. Interesting.
Did she die?
From Lansing, Illinois. She says, "I've recently begun listening to your podcast."
Wait. For all of us at home, who's Jean Gray? I don't know.
She was X-Men. An X-Men.
Oh, I don't know. Sorry.
Don't watch X-Men, Andrew?
No.
And you're supposed to be a nerd?
No, I'm not a nerd.
Oh, are you a geek?
No, I'm cool.
Anyway, I've recently begun listening to your podcast, so forgive me if you've already addressed this question. What do you think about turning the Harry Potter series into a weekly television series, either in live action or a cartoon format? Thanks, love the show.
I put this email in here because we get this question from time to time, actually, and I just think we should go on the record with our thoughts about that. I mean, at this point, Harry Potter has sold out so much theme park merchandising, such as t-shirts, cups, mugs, book bags, blanket, you know, everything is Harry Potter now. You know, I think a TV show with everything Harry Potter that's out there today, nothing adds new plots or anything to the Harry Potter stories, whereas a TV show would, unless you're actually turning the books into TV shows, but then that rules out the movies, so, you know, it overlaps on the movies, so I don't think this would ever happen, ever.
Yeah, at least not with the already written Harry Potter series.
Right.
I mean, I was, because you read it to me yesterday, and I mentioned, well, if anything, they would have to probably do it with like a prequel to it, like high school or like Hogwarts with the Marauders, or, you know, just something like that. But I don't think that they would sell out Harry Potter that much to it to make it a television or cartoon series.
Yeah, live action I think is going a little bit too far. I could see cartoon. If anything, you know, this way they don't have to worry about cost of, you know, house elves and things like that, which they seem so concerned about.
Right.
But I can see a cartoon format, possibly.
of the plot that already exists?
Yeah, see, that's...
I can see, like, maybe an animated prequel. I honestly don't think they're going to remake anything that has already been done.
But to Matt's point, I think it would be a Marauders-type storyline. Maybe they could tell the story of when they were in school.
Yeah.
I think that's a possibility. I think maybe post-Deathly Hallows is a possibility. I don't think that, you know, like Andrew, you were saying before, I don't think you could take this, the seven books and redo them because you have the movies. Why do you need a TV series?
Right.
I wouldn't mind seeing like an animated version of it. Could be a lot more easier to do. Wouldn't have so much limits.
Yep.
But yeah, I really don't see them remaking anything.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, yeah, okay. I agree with you guys. I just thought it was worth mentioning really quickly.
Don't overdo it.
No, yeah, we're not. Okay, so let's move on to chapter by chapter now. We were going to do two chapters this week, but then we realized, well, there's only three of us, so we'll just play it on the safe side and do one chapter, and that chapter is chapter 15, which is called...
The Goblin's Revenge.
To kick it off with a short summary, basically the trio are continuing their search for the Horcruxes, and they're spending more time in this chapter in the forest just camping out. And these scenes have sort of been criticized by a lot of people because it's like, oh, they're just hanging around camping and it's kind of boring. So we'll get into talking about that a little bit later. But at the end of this chapter is a very cool scene that at least Matt and I, probably Mike it too, all are really looking forward to see in the movie. And that's a big fighting scene at the end between the trio. But first, Matt, you want to start off with Mad-Eye's eye.
Yeah. The chapter starts off with Harry waking up first before Harry and Ron do. And he sets out looking for a place to bury Mad-Eye's swiveling, whirling blue eye. And in the book, it describes that the tree that he's looking for is trying to find the oldest, gnarled, resilient-looking tree. And I thought that he kind of described as what Mad-Eye Moody was in Recognize of the Order. Like he was the older, more experienced one. He was kind of gnarled-looking, and he was the most resilient of the Order, I would say.
Yeah.
Would you say that?
No, it's a good catch. Yeah.
That's actually really cool. Because Joe doesn't even really point that out. You just sort of have to read in between the lines there for that.
That's why I read really slowly, Andrew.
I thought you were just dumb.
No.
Learn something new every day. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was just... I'm sorry, but... You know, we talked about this on the road tour a bit. We've talked about this on other episodes too, but I just did not like how this chapter progresses in the beginning. They're just spending time in the forest, going around to different locations, and nothing's really happening until, of course, the little group shows up right by their campsite. But
well, that's the whole point of the chapter. Well, it's the fact that they're not doing anything, and Ron and Hermione are starting to get doubtful of Harry's ability to do this task.
I know, but shouldn't they have researched it a bit more, or just
with what they're in the woods?
What?
They're in the woods.
I realize they couldn't have gone to Grimwald Place, but this just should have all been executed better. And obviously, everything worked out in the end. But I don't like this part of the book, this specific area, which is where they're going through the forest. I just think it's too dull and typical. I don't know.
I have to agree with Matt, though. I think it was put in here to show just exactly what was going on. It's sort of there to build up the whole fight that takes place at the end of the chapter. And, you know, the fact that they're not getting information, that they're not learning anything new, that there isn't a plan, and... You know, anything that, you know, Harry is just in a position now where Ron and Hermione are talking behind his back, and they're scared because they don't really know if they can trust him in the sense of knowing what to do moving forward. They think that Dumbledore had this great plan that Harry is following, but it turns out that they were wrong. And I mean, that's why it shows the fact that they're moving from place to place and the season is changing. It's just to build up all this like angst between them. And you know, it, I don't know, that's just my thought on it.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I mean, this is basically one of those moments where they realize that how much influence of information they had when Dumbledore was alive, or they always had someone to go to, but now they're realizing they have to do everything themselves. They have to be the clever, resilient ones and not rely on, at the last moment, someone coming in to help them with great information or something. They have to do it themselves. And I think this is one of those moments where Harry is the most alone out of everybody, because he's always had Hermione and Harry always having his back. But now that he's seeing that Ron and Hermione talking behind him, not hiding their the fact that they're kind of doubting Harry a little bit, makes Harry seem
for somebody who, yeah, for somebody who's always shared information, every piece of information with them. You know, he feels kind of left out, and it obviously, you can always, you know, make it out to be these quote unquote useless chapters or useless scenes where they're just going from place to place to place. But I think it also shows you that, you know, just the reality of the situation that they're in, and you know, the reality of the war that they're in, that they have to keep moving from place to place, that they have to cover their tracks, you know, make sure that nobody knows that they've been there. And every place they go, they have to put up new enchantments. And it's kind of just an
you're constantly on the run, you know. It's,
yeah, it had to be there.
It does take a toll on you.
Okay. I guess you guys are right. I get it.
All right.
Nice. You bring up a good point. It's all set up at the end of the chapter.
You owe me $10 for making Andrew convinced.
Yeah, but okay. This isn't going to go in the movie.
On that bet we had.
Maybe one scene where they're like, you know, in there, and you could see Ron and Hermione like talking behind Harry's back, and maybe we'll get to hear what they're saying.
Huge slap in the face too. I mean, your friends, how can you talk behind their back? Although it is definitely the locket doing most of the work, because Hermione isn't really the one who's really angry at Harry. She's just kind of taking whatever Ron says, you know. Because you know, when someone rants to your friend, even if you don't agree with them, you just sit there and go, yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So the next thing we wanted to talk about was the conversation between the goblins and the Muggleborns. Big surprise here. Dean Martin makes a little cameo.
Dean Martin?
Dean Thomas, sorry. Yeah. Dean Martin. That would be quite the cameo.
It's like, Steve Martin, what are you doing here, dude? I don't have any movies going on, so.
That would be. Right here. Yeah, plus, I'm pretty sure he's dead. So, yeah. No, Dean Martin. Dean Thomas, sorry. Makes a cameo. And who else is there?
Two goblins. One was Griphook and some other one.
The other wasn't a named one, wasn't it?
Ted Tonks.
And Ted Tonks.
Wasn't it?
Right.
Ted Tonks isn't a goblin.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, but he's there. But he's there. I don't know what the other guy's name is.
I think was he's unnamed. Isn't he, Mike?
Gornick? Gornick?
Something. Oh, or not. He's unnamed in my mind.
Sure, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, sure, he's unnamed. So
they were talking about three things in particular that we wanted to discuss. First of all, the trio finds out that Ginny, Neville, and Luna all tried to steal the Sword of Gryffindor. Why?
Why do they steal it? Does it ever get explained at the end of the book?
Yeah, I don't know. Micah, do you know?
You know, I'm afraid of saying something that's going to be wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know that it was ever explained, but this made me think. I mean, did Ginny
Wait a minute. I know.
Okay.
Dumbledore left it for Harry. Ginny probably told them that that is Harry's, and they want to steal it back for him.
Yeah, but how would Ginny know that? Unless she overheard the
Harry may have told
contents
her.
Of the will.
I mean, we don't know everything they do.
It's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my thought.
So I guess that was a pleasant surprise, but just my immediate reaction to that was, all right, come on, guys. You're not the new trio. Let's just, leave it up to Harry, Ron, and Hermione. It's a bold move, and I guess if I were Harry, I would have really appreciated that. Although, I guess Harry and Hermione were pretty excited to hear that. Ron, not so much because of the punishment, but
yeah. Well,
Ron in a minute.
It shows them there's a revolt in Hogwarts from the students.
Yeah, I guess so. Next thing, Snape sends them to Snape sends them to Hagrid for a punishment, and it's just to the Forbidden Forest. Originally, like when you're first reading this, you don't know what Snape's done, but then of course they do find out. Now, Matt, did you think this was a clue for something?
When I read it, I definitely thought, because I was still on the fence if Snape was good or bad, and I thought since Snape is like the big representation of the Death Eater supposedly in Hogwarts, and wouldn't he do something worse than just send them to Hagrid in the Forbidden Forest? I mean, it just seemed like that was kind of a clue to where Snape's loyalty did lie, because he knew that if he sent them to Hagrid, they wouldn't get a bad punishment.
Yeah,
they would probably just be over there feeding Buckbeak or something.
So yeah, I do think that's an interesting little thing to note.
Which surprised me why Ron would get so upset about it, because if anyone knows, being with Hagrid is a safe place to be, even if it isn't a place like the Forbidden Forest. That was kind of weird, but I guess it was the Horcrux.
I think it was definitely the Horcrux who blew it out of proportion. And yet also, Ron does kind of have a little hesitation with Hagrid and the Forbidden Forest because of Grop and the spiders.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was definitely the Horcrux.
And then another big holy bleep moment was that the goblins revealed that the sword at Hogwarts is a fake. And they were all proud and excited. They were like, yeah, waste of time because it's a fake.
Yeah, why are they so happy it's a fake? I mean, they don't even know where the original one is.
Well, I think they are so happy about it because the goblins think they own the sword. Well, they technically do. So they were happy that theirs, the real one, didn't get stolen, right?
I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the biggest development in this chapter is that they finally figure out how to destroy the Horcruxes with the Gryffindor sword. This was revealed by Phineas Nigelus. Phineas Nigelus?
Just say Phineas.
Phineas. This was revealed by Phineas, of course, in the portrait. And this was a really exciting moment for two out of the three of the trio.
Yeah. I mean, it described Harry punching the... What is punching the air? I mean, is it when you do a boxing move, when you start hitting just plain dead air?
It's when you go, I wish it was a video cast right now. You go, yeah! Like Mario. Like in some of the newer Mario games. He sort of like... It's just when you throw your fist up into the air.
Oh, okay.
Just pretend like there's a balloon right above you and you're just dying to hit it. So you just look up and you punch it. That's okay. What punching the air is, only there's no balloon. Try it sometime.
And Hermione also says that not only is it made of goblin armor, which only gets stronger as it gets beaten down. Is that what it says? but also there's basilisk venom that's impregnated into the metal.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see, moving along here. So Harry and Hermione become very excited about this new discovery because now they know how to destroy the Horcrux, which, let's be honest, it's a big development. Even if they don't know where the sword is, this is the next step in the puzzle, I guess you would say. Ron, Hermione, and Harry get into a heated argument because Ron is very concerned that something else has happened to his family because the people in the camp next to their camp were talking about, oh, the Weasleys don't need another injury, blah, blah, blah. So Ron, this worries Ron, and, you know, it should. I mean, yeah. Any human would be worried that more of his family is hurt. So Ron explodes. Not literally. He just, you know, metaphorically explodes. And do you think it was right, Matt, for Harry to not be concerned for Ginny, Neville, and Luna? First of all,
He wasn't unconcerned or anything. He was relieved more than anything. But he showed more excitement for the fact that they finally got a great piece of information that they've been looking for, that both Ron and Hermione have been
they needed to know.
Yeah. Well, that they've been waiting for too. I mean,
yeah.
They were also they. I don't know the word. I'm sorry.
I think you're looking at two completely different types of people, or maybe I think Hermione and Harry are a little bit closer in the type of person that they are. Ron's somebody who's probably never been away from home very much.
That's also what he said. He said that in the book.
His family.
He singled Harry and Hermione out because, you know, they – what did he say exactly?
Well, there was a part in the chapter where he was really eager to know if Harry was seeing anything through Voldemort about his family, which if you think about it is kind of stupid because if he's seeing anything about his family through Voldemort, it's probably not the best thing in the world for the Weasleys. So I think he was just trying to get any piece of information he possibly could. And, you know, with his family being in trouble, there was that one point where I forget what he says to Harry, but Harry talks about his parents and the fact that they're dead.
Yeah. Actually, let me go to that.
If we could get the exact quote, I don't remember exactly what he said.
Oh, yeah, right here. On page 309 of the U.S. edition, Ron says, "Oh, you're sure, are you? Right then. Well, I won't bother myself about them. It's all right for you two, isn't it, with your parents safely out of the way?" This is Ron, and then Harry yells, "My parents are dead!" in italics. Harry bellowed. "And mine could be going the same way," yelled Ron, which is a good comeback, I think. Score one for Ron. And, then Harry goes, "Then go back to them. Pretend you've got over your spattergrate and Mummy will be able to feed you up." And then they both draw their wands and are about to fight. But then Hermione yells, "Protego!" And, you know, blocks the spells, whatever they're going to fire at each other.
That's a pretty ignorant comment on the part of Ron. What he said.
That they're out of the way. Yeah. I mean, I think the point Ron's trying to make is that they don't have to worry about their parents. I mean, whether they're dead or in Australia or not, they don't have to worry about them. So Ron has something else to worry about. He's got this. He has people to worry about that are not with him.
He does have more to lose in that kind of aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so does Harry, I think, in a way.
Well, Harry has a huge weight on his shoulder, but you got to think from Ron's perspective. He's had a huge family that has been very close, and he is really
They should be in the order. I mean, they put themselves in that position,
right? But still, you still have family you have to worry about. It doesn't matter, you know, what position they're in, whether they're, you know, whether they're in the order or they're just not in the order. It doesn't make a difference. You still have to be protective. It's like the motherly protection we've talked about so many times on this show. Ron's got a family protection.
And he's feeling upset because he's been sitting for a few weeks, not actually getting anything done. And this whole time, you know, he's worrying about what his family is, what's happening to his family right now. Does he even have a family anymore? I mean, he doesn't know anything. So he's getting very anxious.
Right. So it is justified.
Yeah. Yeah, not in the way that he does it, though. I mean, he's essentially blaming Harry for all this. And if you think about it, yes, it is his fault. But Ron also agreed to go and do this. So he's got to realize that he made the conscious decision to go along with Harry, and that he's in this position because he chose to do that. Going back to the whole idea of choices. And I think Harry, for his, you know, nasty as the shots that he takes are, you know, saying, oh, go back to mummy, blah, blah, blah. It's true, because that's the type of person that Ron is. And he doesn't realize it until he goes back, just how spoiled in a way he is.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think the locket really just exaggerates and amplifies every emotion that you have. And he may not really be... He may be thinking this, but I don't think it's as blatant as he put it out when he argued with Harry.
I don't think so either. Do you guys think that if Ron took the locket off, it would have made much of a difference? I really don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
No.
And I think Harry recognizes that in the chapter two. He says, no, this is the truth. This is what's been waiting to come out for a while now.
Yeah. But he also... I mean, not to go in ahead in the book, but it took a while for it to wear off. I mean, after Ron left, he started to realize what happened. So,
yeah.
And he realized with the things that he said, and that's not really what he was about.
Right.
Well, and I think the end of the chapter is relevant too, because I'm sure that probably plays a role, and we see it later on with the Horcrux, when it materializes more, with Harry and Hermione, and the fact that Hermione chose to stay with Harry instead of come with Ron.
Well, she said it too. She goes, she says that I chose to stay with Harry, and that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Let's see. What did she say? Are you staying or what? She goes, yes, I'm staying, Ron. We said we'd go with Harry. We said we'd help. And then he goes, I get it. You choose him. And there's this love triangle that doesn't really exist.
But I thought this was really interesting because during this part, you really see Hermione's love for Ron. It's you can tell that she's losing, what's the best way to put her love interest? I guess it's just the way that she left him.
Yeah, it does show her what her feelings are for Ron in respect as her feelings for Harry as a friend.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't see – I don't think you would have Hermione screaming after Harry if he did that.
Right. I agree.
At least not crying.
Mm-hmm.
Because then she started bawling when she came back in the tent.
Yeah.
And I looked up the stuff on the sword. I can't find a reason as to why they tried to steal it. So if somebody knows, email us.
Yeah.
Perhaps there was... email us if your name begins with one of the letters of the first half of the alphabet. That'll help cut down on emails. Seriously, don't. Okay, so the last part we wanted to talk about in this chapter was the rain. The rain in this chapter is so movie-like. The rain begins with a soft pitter-patter, and then the argument slowly starts. Then the rain gets heavier, and the argument gets heavier. And then the rain's pouring down, it's raining cats and dogs, and they're arguing like cats and dogs who don't like cats and dogs. And it's just bad, and it's great storytelling, but it's also very movie-like with how in
it's
movies...
It's very theatrical.
I'm no film major, but I'll tell you what, I've seen enough films to tell you, in these movies, yes, very theatrical. The rain will start, you know, it'll be cloudy, and there's sort of something ominous going on, and then it'll start raining, and then something terrible happens. So, very good illustration of what's going on, and I hope it's carried over in the movie.
Especially with emotional scenes, and especially with rain, they will put it in. It's just a lot easier, even for the actors, because if they really can't pull off that argument, the rain will help. Bring out the feeling of
the emotion. Scene. Yeah. Now, all right. So that's it. I think it's time for quote quiz.
Quiz.
Bringing it back. It's like a boomerang quote quiz. This week's quote is, "Isn't that a Death Eater idea? Why is that there?" That's from chapter 16.
Why is it there? I don't know.
Well, we'll discuss next week. Next week's chapter is Godric's Hollow. So that'll be... might bring a tear to my eye. Wow, weird. Okay, so as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, we're going to put a new spin on two segments we've been doing for a while. I'm really excited about this because they get a nice little refresh. The first one is favorites. We've been doing favorites for a while now. Gosh, I would say maybe in the 60s. The episodes in the 60s, we started the segment. I could be totally wrong. But so we've always been talking about our most favorite. So this week, we're going to play least favorites, where we talk about what our least favorite of something was. And this week, we're going to talk about an email sent in from Emily14 of Arlington, Texas. She actually gave us this idea. She says, "Hi, I'm a big fan of HP, but not a fan of the movies. I was just wondering what your guys' least favorite HP movie is. Thanks. P.S. You guys are doing a great job." Who wants to start? What is your least favorite movie, Mike or Armette?
I'll go first. I'm going to give a pass to the first two just because I think that they needed to be the way that they were, kind of more lighthearted and childish in a way, because it was about them being introduced to the wizarding world. Of the other three, I would have to say, and Laura would disagree, Prisoner of Azkaban. I was a big fan of the book, and while I know Alfonso did a lot of good things with the movie, the fact that the Marauders were left out and not explained kind of ruined it for me. If you were a non-book reader, you probably had a lot of questions at the end of this movie as far as who these people were and how Lupin knew any of them, although it was kind of explained at the end. That would be my answer.
Yeah.
Matt, your least favorite.
Well, I kind of agree with Micah saying that we should leave the first two, leave them alone.
I agree with that too.
Even though I really did not like the second movie at all, but I'll let Chris Columbus go with that. I would have to say that my least favorite so far is movie 5. Only really because it's my favorite book. And I think that happens with a lot of people. Like, their favorite book, they have such high expectations. And they're usually let down with that. Especially with the Harry Potter books. Like, every single person I know whose favorite book is usually their least favorite because, you know, they left out so many of their favorite moments. And that is no exception to me. I did not like movie 5 very much because it left out a lot of things that I really wanted to see. And they left in... well, they just left out so much crap.
Yeah. I think this is a hard decision. After listening to you guys, I still don't know. But I think I agree with Matt that... Order of the Phoenix, well, I did love it. I really did love Order of the Phoenix. I just think it was the biggest letdown in terms of what to expect with just the build-up of that film with the trailers. And it was my favorite book, too. And I loved it, but at the same time, I didn't like some of the transitions with, you know, going through the newspapers. And the flashbacks were just, all the flashbacks were just a real turn-off to me. And the scene at the end with Dumbledore and Voldemort fighting, I was so looking forward to. I was really, truly believing that was going to be the most amazing scene in a Harry Potter film thus far. And it was just a letdown.
Well, they left off so many things in that scene. They left off the statues coming to life. They left off Fox coming to Dumbledore's aid, which was my favorite part of that entire scene. And they really messed up the whole Harry being when Voldemort came into Harry when he was being possessed.
Yeah.
There was nothing like
it. It was just so different from the books. It's like, "Oh, what are you doing?"
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the one we haven't really touched on at all would be movie 4, and I just thought that the way they cut it down, they did a good job with Goblet of Fire. I mean, Mike Newell did a really good job.
High we inside, talked about this did, last yeah. week.
You know, with basically the first 100 pages of the book going by in about 5 minutes.
Yes, that was the thing. They did a great job compressing that darn movie down to
they did.
Something that covered everything, but it got the job done.
Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, they took out a few characters, but they knew what characters they really needed to keep. I didn't like Goblet of Fire after I saw it, but then after I saw it a few times, you know, it starts to grow on you, but so far Order of the Phoenix hasn't grown on me at all.
Yeah, and same here.
I think in Goblet of Fire, the other thing I would say was they went a little bit overboard with the whole trying to make sure the audience knew that Moody wasn't really Moody. I mean, just they dropped way too many
they
hints
did.
Throughout the course of the film.
And they didn't kill Barty Crouch Jr. at the end with the Dementor, so most of the fans think that he's
right.
still alive, pretty much.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, I did love Umbridge, like I loved her in the book, but...
Well, she made the movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Without her, that... Yeah. Totally. She did a fantastic acting job. If you have a idea for least favorites, maybe we'll try to do favorites and least favorites, but with different subjects each week. To really mix things up, let us know. Send in least favorites. Try to come up with something creative since we're talking about our least favorite. It can't be like least favorite soundtrack song because there's so many, you know. You just.
Or book.
Or least favorite book.
I guess
too.
It could.
Yeah, there's lots of these we can do. So send them in, mugglecast@staff.mugglenet.com. Make it easy for us. Put least favorites in the subject line, please.
Least favorite character. That's a good one.
Yes. The next segment we're going to put a new spin on this week is Make the Connection, but instead it's going to be Make the Music Connection. Do you like that intro?
Sure.
I'm going to start animating all of our new segments. I'll do it again
different.
For all you at home who don't want to rewind. Make the music. I'll practice it more.
Why don't you just add a sound clip, you know, like a song that has music in it.
Because I don't have that sort of technology yet. Well, I do, but...
You're lazy.
Actually, no. Well, yeah, it's partially that. But, no, I just like having it all set up for live shows. It's
you like to hear yourself.
I do. Make the music! Okay, so anyway, what we're going to do... Well, I'll explain it to you. This was actually sent in by John Curl, 19, of Menham, New Jersey. I've actually never heard of that town. But this was his idea. He writes, I have a cool idea for a new segment. It came to me when I was listening to the latest episode of MuggleCast during the Make the Connection segment. You basically take any song and either A, connect it to Harry Potter in some way, or B, find a spot in either the movies or books where it can be used as a soundtrack. Like, for example, the song Bring Me to Life by Evanescence would be perfect for the final battle in DH. Let me know what you think, Andrew. Love the show, and you are my idol. Aw, that's sweet. From John Curl. So, I actually just realized I didn't even really prepare any. but here, I'll do this. Matt, for the final scene in Order of the Phoenix, where Harry and... We'll focus on Order of the Phoenix today. When Dumbledore and Voldemort are dueling, if you had to pick one song to fill that gap instead of those cheesy sound effects they had in there.
Any song?
Any song.
How about The Saints Are Coming by U2 and Green Day?
Okay. All right. The Saints are... See, we might have to set this... This is just the test run this week, but
yeah.
Maybe we'll set it up so we come up with music ideas ahead of the time, and then we could play them or something. I don't know. But, okay, and Micah will stick with Order of the Phoenix. If you had to insert a song in the scene where Umbridge gives Harry his first attention when he starts writing with the special quill. What song would you add there, when specifically when Harry's first discovering what the what it does, what the quill does to his hand?
Wow. Oh, I got a good song. I think I do. How about An Innocent Man by Billy Joel?
Oh, yeah. That'd be good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. That's good. Well,
thanks,
if
guys.
You guys have any ideas for make the music connection, just send them on in to mugglecast@saf.mugglenet.com with make the music connection in the subject line. And like John said in his email, you can either A, connect it to Harry Potter in some way, or B, find a spot in either the movies or books where it can be used as a soundtrack. And we'll read them here, or we can quiz each other. So send them in. Thanks, guys. Let's wrap up the show today with a chicken soup,
for the Mugglecast.
So, are you mocking me?
No.
All right, Mr. Smarty Party Pants. Why don't you read it from Kristen 19 of Penn State University.
This chicken soup for the Mugglecast soul comes from Kristen 19 from Penn State University, which is in Pennsylvania. She writes, "Hey Mugglecasters. First off, I love your podcast. I started listening from the beginning, but then stopped over the summer, so now I'm catching up since last year. I just wanted to say that I don't know what I would do without the episodes of Mugglecast. I go to Penn State University, which is quite a big campus, making me walk long way to class every day. It's so awesome to listen to you guys talk about Harry Potter on my walks around campus. You guys totally make my day, and I think you're great, so keep up the good work. Oh, and I think Eric lives in Reading, right? Well, I live about an hour and a half away. Well, thanks for being my chicken soup for the Penn State student soul."
Yay. Matt and I, thank you, Kristen. The reason I included this was just because Matt and I were actually at Penn State. And,
oh, that's right.
That was cool. Yeah.
Didn't we see her there?
Did we? Hopefully not, because that would be awkward if we didn't remember.
Go visit Eric. He'll love to have you over.
Well, funny story. I don't know if Eric wants to announce this to everyone yet, but he's not actually in Reading anymore. So, but I don't know. Well, he can talk about that if he wants to. I think that just about does it for this week's episode of Mugglecast. I just want to say real quick, a little book update or reading update or whatever. Matt and I actually just both bought Twilight today. We've talked about it on the show a couple times. It's going to be turned into a movie. Three books in the series are out right now, and the fourth and final one is due out in August. And we haven't started reading it yet, but I'm actually really excited to read it because all we hear is good things about it. Right, Matt?
Yeah, sure.
So, I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about it on a future episode. Apparently, it's a nice, easy read. So, I'm looking forward to it.
It does have very nice cover art.
What's that?
It does have very nice cover art.
It does. I'm very excited to start reading. So, see how that goes. Maybe we'll give it a little review. I think that's about it. One other thing I did actually want to say was just a quick thank you to everyone who goes on our MySpace and leaves messages for us. Or even if you email us through mugglecast@saf.mugglenet.com or through our feedback form. I just want to say thank you for taking the time to write to us. Unfortunately, we can't get back to everyone. We can't reply to everyone, especially on MySpace. We do read the messages that are posted there, but we don't have the time to write back, especially MySpace is so complicated with everything that they do. You know, it's kind of hard to get to everyone. But
just reiterate, we do read the messages.
Yeah.
So if you think you're going to get away with a comment, we usually respond to those people.
When people send something negative, yeah, we do feel tempted to respond. But the funny thing is, and let me just say this real quick. You guys who write into us and complain are, like, complain. I'm not talking about little, like, show stunk this way. I'm talking about, like, you guys are dead in the water. Why you continue going on, blah, blah, blah. What's funny about these guys is they're so scared of getting a reply back. They don't even give us their email address. So if you're going to write to us and complain, at least have the courage to include your email address so we can write back a nice adult, serious letter. You know, we're not going to, like, post your email address, but, like, come on. You're so scared of, like, our response. Like, that's not cool. if you're going to voice your concerns, at least give us the opportunity to write back with our side of the story, you know, so. But at any rate, thank you, everyone, for writing to us. We do read all your messages, and we thank you very, very much for taking the time to write to us. I just feel bad when people write to us and we don't give them a response. We do read them, and we do thank you for taking the time to write to us. So I think that's it for this week's episode of MuggleCast. It was a good one. We hope you enjoyed the new segments and our news discussion, and, of course, chapter by chapter. We'll be back next week with more hosts, hopefully. Laura actually was supposed to be on this week's episode, but then she bailed on us last minute because she had schoolwork.
Oh, jeez, her priorities are so out of order.
I know.
She needs to sort out her priorities.
Oh,
look at that.
I love that scene. That's one of my favorite little quips in the movies. All right, so that does it for us this week. I'm Andrew Sims.
You didn't close.
Oh, shoot. I almost forgot our contact information. Man, I'm getting so old. Well, there are numerous ways to contact us. Of course, we'll give you the information now. We have a P.O. Box down in Georgia. The address for that is P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia, 30028. You can send us anything, but Laura is hoping nobody sends her pickles. Send us gold or something like that, but not pickles, please. You can also call in to the MuggleCast hotline to leave us a voicemail. To do that, we have a few phone numbers. If you're in the United States, you can dial 1-218-20-MAGIC. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-8144-0677. And if you're in Australia, you can dial 02-8003-5668. If you don't prefer that, you can also Skype the username MuggleCast. No matter how you call us, just remember to keep your message under a minute. Eliminate as much background noise as possible. Send us a question that you have about the books or the series, the movie, the fandom, whatever you want. And we'll address those on an upcoming show, if it's a good question. You can also visit MuggleCast.com for a handy feedback form to contact any one of us. You can also just directly email us at our first name at staff.mugglenet.com, with the exception of Matt, who's MatthewB@staff.mugglenet.com. Don't forget to also visit MuggleCast.com for a variety of community outlets, including our MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm, and our ever-growing fan listing and forums run by the wonderful Alice and all those who do that over there. You can also dig the show at dig.com, vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley, and rate and review us at Yahoo Podcasts. Whew, that was a mouthful. Thank you, everyone, for listening this week. Once again, I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Micah Turnabout.
And I'm Matthew Britton.
We will see you all next week for episode 133. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
No. Laura couldn't manage the words to intro me.
Intro you.
In the news center, so I just intro myself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Actually, I heard the uncensored version of the bloopers. That was even funnier.
Yeah. You have to keep it.
Sometimes it goes uncensored accidentally.
How is it that out of all the hosts on the show, Laura is the only one that gets to actually slide through all the censored versions? And she's the girl.
Because I'm so used to hearing her curse that I don't even pick up the bad words. It's just, Laura's just saying another word. Like, you know, like the word the. It's just, you don't pick up on it.
Yeah.
So.
And we can pick on Laura because she's not here this week.
Right. Laura ditched us today again.
She's going to hate me for that.
Yeah. This is all Andrew telling us to say this, Laura, too.